This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We have a jam-packed show for you today. During the first hour, we'll be covering two topics. The first is the use of linoleic acid for secondary prevention of CHD and death. Plus, the second segment will be a skin serum that reduces scarring and wrinkling for the women. Then during the second hour, we'll be doing the Subversity Science Roundup, where Adele Musa applies the sniff test to science in the news. So it's going to be a fun show. Let's get started. We have Dr. Chris Ramsden from the U.S. Department, the NIH, the National Institute of Health, on the show. And we're going to be talking about linoleic acid for the prevention of CHD. Tell me something. What was the design of this research, first of all, Dr. Ramsden?
Hi, Carl. Thanks for having me on the show. This was an old trial performed between 1966 to 1973. It was a randomized controlled trial that assigned patients who had had a recent heart attack or other coronary event to one of two diets. One of them to continue their habitual diets, which were quite high in saturated fats, and the other to replace these saturated fat sources with a vegetable oil, in this case, safflower oil, that was very rich in the omega-6 fat, linoleic acid. And they followed these subjects for an average of a little bit more than 3 years and recorded, whether or not they died or, what was the cause of their death.
What was the outcome?
They actually published way back in 1978 that there was an increased risk of death from all causes, but they didn't break down the different types of death. So we were very interested, way back then, this class of compounds called polyunsaturated fats were sort of all grouped together right, on the basis that they lower blood cholesterol. And in the ensuing 40 or 50 years, it's become more and more clear that different polyunsaturated fats have different effects, both biochemically and also possibly different clinical effects. So, in that context, we were very interested to go back and try and figure out what kind of outcomes they had on coronary heart disease and cardiovascular disease, because this specific trial only increased one of those polyunsaturated fats, omega-6 linoleic acid.
What, and obviously your colleague, Dr. Hiblin, has been on the show, and we've talked about some of the other potentially negative issues related to some of these PUFAs. And as you point out, not all polyunsaturated fats tend to be good things. However, my assistant, Ginny Robards, points out that in the study, which was the Sydney Diet Heart Study, they used Miracle Margarine. Was Miracle Margarine containing any hydrogenated oils? It would appear to me that that would have been a hydrogenated product.
Yes, we point out in our paper, we're very careful with it and point out all the potential limitations of the trial. So I'd like to direct you to that. One of those potential limitations is actually that the group who was randomized to the high linoleic acid diet consumed about 15% of their calories from linoleic acid. That's a little more than twice average U.S. intake. So there's always a question of generalizability in these randomized controlled trials. And the reason for that is because they were trying to lower blood cholesterol as much as they possibly could. Another limitation is this was actually a patient population with established coronary heart disease.
Right.
So, you know, there's always a question of generalizability to people who do not have coronary heart disease. It's also men, you know, age 30 to 59 years. So the question is this relevant for women? These are the type of issues you always have and should always be pointed out in clinical research, even when it's randomized controlled trials. The issue of potential changes in trans fats in either of the groups is discussed really at length in our paper, too. They did use a polyunsaturated margarine, and this margarine was selected because it could lower blood cholesterol and had a high concentration of linoleic acid. So at the time, people were using a lot of, you know, a decent amount of common table margarines and cooking margarines and other and shortenings that contained trans fats and probably in more abundance. So this, you know, liquid safflower oil was the primary intervention source, but they also provided a margarine that probably had relatively small amounts of trans fats but did contain them.
Right.
However, it's important that they also probably displaced substantial amounts of trans fats in the diet. So, you know, it's a limitation we pointed out. I don't think it really accounts for the findings. Also, trans fats raised blood cholesterol, and the treatment group had significant reductions in blood cholesterol.
Right. Also, there's some emerging science that maybe saturated fat was not the demon that we once thought. Saturated fat acts differently in the body depending on if it is presented with a highly refined carbohydrate diet, and there's oxidation of the saturated fat, and also the origins of the saturated fat itself. So have you guys looked at that at all when you went back and reevaluated this research?
You know, our interest has predominantly been in the polyunsaturated fats and not, you know, not specifically even related to coronary heart disease. So, no, I haven't really spent a lot of time looking at whether or not saturated fats are beneficial.
Okay,
or,
so when you went back and started to extrapolate out, were you able to determine the true effects of the linoleic acid when you started to take this generalized all-cause mortality and splinter it down to individual risk factors?
So, you know, I think along the lines of with the recognition that different polyunsaturated fats are likely to have different effects, they certainly have different biochemical effects and that, you know, they're likely to have different clinical effects as well. Originally, this was a key missing piece of data. So, you know, other researchers who have tried to look at the full evidence base were missing, you know, the actual outcomes of interest in this trial. So that was one of the real reasons we wanted to try and recover the data. And we were really fortunate that I was able to contact Boonsing Lilarthapin, who is one of the original study investigators, and they had the foresight to store the tape on an old 9-track magnetic tape, and it had the data on it, and we were able to extract it and convert it to a readable format, and then worked very closely with Boonsing Lilarthapin to be able to actually convert it and analyze it.
Why do you think that they didn't do that in the initial study?
Well, they did publish there was increased risk of death from all causes way back in 1978, but it wasn't. It seemed that it was, you know, an answer that was almost opposite to what was expected, and to what other people were showing in smaller, you know, in small trials. I think at the time, again, all these polyunsaturates were sort of grouped together for their effects on cholesterol lowering, and there was really no good explanation. You know, now we have some ideas, you know, that may help account for these effects.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up. We're talking with Dr. Chris Ramsden from the NIH about the effects of linoleic acid on coronary heart disease and obviously death. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Into again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
New from Rob Ragish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to the Blueprint Printbulletin.com today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise With Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. Guys and gals, are you over 30 with a poor sex drive, gaining unwanted fat, or feel weak or tired? You may be suffering from hormone imbalances that can be treated affordably by physician-supervised hormone therapy. Why wait to feel like you again? Call Core Medical Group now to schedule your hormone check and save $100 when you mention Superhuman Radio. Call 617-869-7961. That's 617-869-7961. Physical and medical history required prior to therapy. Some restrictions apply. Call for details, 617-869-7961. Feel like you again.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Dr. Chris Ramsden is with us from the NIH. We're talking about linoleic acid and its effect on coronary heart disease. Okay, so what can be said now that the data has been extrapolated about linoleic acid's effect on CHD and potential death from a second occurrence, I guess we're talking about, of heart disease, heart attack, because these individuals were already past their first event, correct?
Yes, they all had either a heart attack or another coronary event. I think, you know, what can be said is there's a more complete evidence base now, and those who actually take a look and synthesize all these data and come out with dietary guidelines, I think we'll take a very careful look at this in the context of all the other evidence and see if the dietary guidelines need to be altered.
So is it safe to say that linoleic acid is safe to consume based on its potential effects on CHD?
I'd say certainly, linoleic acid is an essential fatty acid from the omega-6 family, and meaning, you know, as an essential fatty acid, you have to consume some of it, and it's present in very small amounts, but present in many of the natural foods. So yes, you certainly need to eat some of it. The intake has actually, though, in the United States, tripled in the past century. So as sort of food processing or oil processing techniques have become available, it's increased from about 2% of calories to 7% of calories or so in the past 100 years. So the question isn't really, you know, do you need to consume it? The question is going to be, what's the optimal amount?
Okay, so the edible oil industry and its influence on processed, manufactured foods is really the reason that we have a higher omega-6 intake than we do if we eat, and I have to be careful how I say this, because if we talk about beef that's fed grain and corn and soy, we know that it has a higher omega-6 to omega-3 ratio than, say, cows that are allowed the luxury of eating and being finished on grass before being processed, which have more of a 1-to-1 instead of a 1-to-26 omega-3 to omega-6. So with that being said, the food chain has been influenced by manufacturing to contain more omega-6 fatty acids, which have been linked to a chronic inflammatory response instead of a healthy inflammatory response. Would you agree with that statement?
I'd say as far as beef being an example, beef is quite low in polyunsaturated fats in general, because ruminant animals, they actually hydrogenate fats in the stomach. So you basically end up mostly with monounsaturates and saturated fats. Grass-fed beef do have higher amounts of omega-3 fats. I think, minimal differences in omega-6 fats. So that change in that ratio or relative amounts would be due to slightly higher amounts of omega-3 fats.
Okay.
Chicken and some other animals can actually have pretty substantial amounts of omega-6 linoleic acid if they're fed a corn and soybean oil, soybean-based diet.
Yes.
They have very complex biological actions, and I don't think the full story is in yet on what these compounds are doing.
Okay, and we're not trying to scare people off of omega-6 fatty acids, because as you point out, and as your colleague Dr. Hiblin had pointed out on our show in the past, that while some may do some things that are not good, the inclusion of omega-6 fatty acids is an important thing. But at this point in time, you really can't say either way from your research that the consumption of omega-6 fat of linoleic acid influences for or against a reoccurrence of an ischemic event in somebody who's already had an event. Can you?
Well, I'd say, in the doses that were provided and in the context of that trial, in the very high intakes of linoleic acid, in this situation, yes, it did actually increase the risk of death and cardiovascular death despite significant cholesterol lowering. So,
okay.
That makes it seem as though the original understanding of this is probably a much more complex story,
yeah,
than was originally believed.
Well, what even complicates it even greater is the emergence of a body of evidence that the linkage between cholesterol levels and cardiovascular disease seems to not be so clear after all. So it's almost like, okay, it doesn't influence cholesterol levels, but right now there's a whole new discussion about whether or not cholesterol levels are the important thing, or which fractions of cholesterol are most important in their causative effects of coronary heart disease and atherosclerosis, or are they corollary? So I mean that even complicates things even greater. I want to bring your attention to the last two paragraphs of the study, if I can. It says, to coincide with publication of this paper, the BMJ is pulling together examples of missing data it has uncovered as part of its open data campaign. We're also asking researchers to tell us about any other documented examples of missing data to build a picture of the full extent of the problem, which is undermining evidence-based medicine worldwide. The current best estimate is that half of all the clinical trials that are conducted and completed are never published. Even when they are, the underlying data that the results are based on is rarely open to external analysis, which is a cornerstone of proper scientific scrutiny. This means doctors cannot be certain that the drugs they are prescribing daily are properly evaluated for safety and efficacy. So we do all of these, you know, the word rigor is used in science, you know, reproducibility of the scientific research is usually the acid test of whether or not we're on to something. How can we be sure that the science that we are looking at and basing all of these opinions on is even correct if information is withheld? Not purposely. I'm not saying that there was any maliciousness, but why is any information withheld? Why isn't all of this data open to all of the scientific community to scrutinize? That's what peer review is all about.
Yeah, I think you bring up, and the BMJ, the British Medical Journal, is certainly pursuing this potentially very important issue. And that issue is, the possibility that some clinical trial results are not published, known as publication bias, or also that some publications may not contain all of the information that is necessary to actually evaluate the true effects of a drug, or in this case, a dietary intervention. I think this is potentially going to have some major implications if other data sets turn up. It could have implications across many medical disciplines.
Yeah, I agree. Why do you think, and I know that you may not be able to answer this question directly, but in your humble opinion, why do you think that the FDA does not do these studies in a parallel fashion to verify whether or not the results being submitted by a company or group is reproducible? I mean, they are the governing agent. They are the ones who make the decisions whether or not this science, quote unquote, flies or not. But yet they're making it with one hand over their eyes saying, well, we believe what you're submitting is accurate, so we will rubber stamp it. Why are they not given the task of scientific rigor and saying, okay, you submitted this study, we're going to duplicate this study, and we're going to see if we come up with the same results before we say this is something that now translates to the new standard of care in medicine?
Well, I'd like to point out a couple of things. One is that I believe in 2004, after some, there was a possibility that some of these studies weren't fully published, and there were some issues, I believe, with Vioxx and some other drugs. There's actually currently drug, or all of these trials that are, at least the randomized controlled trials, are registered at clinicaltrials.gov or at another site. So at least people know what trials are being performed. And then I believe several other steps have been taken to try and reduce the possibility of publication bias going forward, at least in the large randomized controlled trials. The other issue is that, these trials are extremely expensive and take a great deal of time, effort. Many patients or other subjects are involved, and there's always the question of, clinical trial, performing clinical trials ethically, not putting people at risk. You have to, everybody needs to know what they're potentially getting into in a trial.
Right.
So I don't think this is something the FDA or anyone else, if somebody does a large randomized controlled trial, is going to be able to actually replicate a trial or go through the effort. It would take too long, cost too much money. But what the FDA does try and do is evaluate all of the available evidence and then come to a conclusion.
Yeah, I understand. And I understand they are at arm's length from some of this. I'm not clear on why clinical trials are so expensive. Is the expense related to following procedures that are mandated by organizations and authorities having jurisdiction over them, and fees related, or is it just the actual scientific community, their expenses, the labs, and so on, that is the greatest financial burden? I for some reason, I'm under the impression that the real cost in clinical trials, and I stand to be corrected, that's why I'm asking you this, the real cost in clinical trials is, you know, fees and adhering to specific requirements set forth by authorities having jurisdiction over these, and not the actual mechanics of doing the research. Am I wrong about that?
Well, you're getting way outside of my my areas of expertise.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But I do think these are very complex clinical trials, when you have, especially large scale trials with thousands of patients, where you're following people, you know, providing one intervention or another, and then following them for, you know, months to years, and then having all of the investigators involved, you know, their time has to be paid for as their job.
Sure.
And then, you know, going through and analyzing and hopefully publishing the full data set.
Right.
It takes a long time. It's a great deal of effort, and potentially can have very important benefits for the population or a portion of the population.
Yeah. Listen, Dr. Ramsden, thank you so much for coming on Superhuman Radio. So bottom line, the summary is the jury is still out on linoleic acid's effect, and people shouldn't scatter and run away from omega-6 fatty acids, but they should monitor their intake. Would that be a good summary statement?
Right. I think this is an issue that probably needs to be looked at again. You know, these raised some red flags about linoleic acid, at least in the doses that were provided, and I think people will take that into consideration when reevaluating the evidence.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Ramsden.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay. All right, stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be talking about a skin serum that can actually rid you of scars and wrinkles. Could it be true? We're going to find out in just a minute. Stay tuned. Ein bisschen Gold und Silber, ein bisschen Glitzer, Glitzer. Habt ihr nichts zu fressen hier? Ich will Pizza.
Save money and gain performance and health benefits with Whey Natural USA. They are overstocked and having a blowout sale on 2.5-pound jugs of grass-fed whey. This awesome product comes from Amish-fed cows inside the USA. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite method and comes with only three ingredients: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Save big. Just click the Whey Natural USA banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Get a free sample plus a 15% discount with free shipping coupon product for the first 100 customers. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
calling all men.
The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
Guys and gals, are you over 30 with a poor sex drive, gaining unwanted fat, or feel weak or tired? You may be suffering from hormone imbalances that can be treated affordably by physician-supervised hormone therapy. Why wait to feel like you again? Call Core Medical Group now to schedule your hormone check and save $100 when you mention Superhuman Radio. Call 617-869-7961. That's 617-869-7961. Physical and medical history required prior to therapy. Some restrictions apply. Call for details, 617-869-7961. Feel like you again.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Well, you know what? We talk about anti-aging all the time, but there is some vanity in anti-aging. Let's face it, being healthy internally is always the goal, the primary goal, staving off age-related disease. But look, we want to look good too. The skin on our face is what presents itself when people meet us. We've got Dr. Dave Wanorowski on with us. How you doing, Dr. Dave?
I'm good. How are you, Carl?
Good. And we're going to talk a little bit about how skin ages and what can be done to actually affect it and reverse some of the effects of aging. So when we talk about skin aging, it's not all about just sun exposure, is it?
Oh, not at all, Carl. The aging process is pretty complex, as you mentioned, and it may present itself just as an external thing, but there's a lot of internal things that are happening.
What is happening?
Well, a couple of things, you know. So let's talk a little bit about young skin and what constitutes young skin. So when you see a young person with healthy skin, you know, they look radiant, glowing, sort of a little plumpness to the skin, not fat, but just a certain kind of texture that you can see. That you just look at that person and say, oh, that's a young person. There's no mistaking it. Not just, you know, the fact that there's no wrinkles or that kind of stuff. But what you're seeing is you're seeing the perfect balance between damage and repair. So when you're young, your body in general, and of course your skin, which is a huge part of your body, and as you mentioned, especially the facial skin is the area that presents itself to most people, our skin has a tremendous ability to repair itself. As we get older, it's not so much that we have so much more damage, although generally we do. You know, there's something about adulthood in Western society that causes us to do damaging things to ourselves that we don't do when we're young. You know, drinking, smoking, staying up late, these kinds of things. And all that, you know, you don't get away with that. It takes a toll, and it depends on, you know, what kind of genes and all the other things that you do determine how much that shows up. But when you're young, none of that shows up because you've got this wonderful repair mechanism. As you get older, you lose the ability to repair the damage, and you lose it because of several specific areas that we know about now as we've studied aging, both internally and externally in the skin. So that's primarily what we're looking at.
Now, the words stem cell are all over. I remember when I first started following stem cell research 8 years ago, there would be a study every month or so. Now there's a half a dozen studies coming out of PubMed every single day. Are stem cells the primary repair mechanism in the skin?
Well, they're part of it. They're the parts bags that we need to create new, young, healthy cells. But you would also think, and it's true, it's a fact, that a differentiated cell, a non-stem cell, has at least a limited capacity to keep itself up and repair itself from some damage. It's got, you know, some internal mechanisms that will allow it to fix things that go wrong. It has to, or you would just need stem cells all the time for everything. And that really isn't the case. You do need a lot of stem cells, and it's funny that you mentioned the word stem cell. one of the things that was just discovered in the past year, which is really important for our discussion, is the skin is the largest repository of stem cells in the body.
Really?
And that was discovered within the past 12 months by a Spanish scientist by the name of Maria Blasco. And up until that time, we really didn't know where the bulk of our stem cells live. Now, they're everywhere, but the skin's got a ton of them.
Okay, so what when our skin ages, the ability for cells to repair themselves slows down or even diminishes completely. What is it that we have to do to revive that?
Well, the first thing you have to do is try to keep your existing cells as healthy as possible. Now, skin is kind of an exception. It's a special exception because the outermost layer of skin is actually dead cells. Most people know that, and you know, when you exfoliate in the morning, you wash your face, you're doing two things. You're cleaning the skin, but you're also removing this layer of dead cells. So the skin has a special need for stem cells because even if it were able to repair itself, ultimately the outermost layer of skin is dead anyway, so it doesn't have any repair capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So the skin is specifically very dependent on stem cells, much more so than other areas in the body. So when you talk about aging skin, it's somewhat the repair mechanisms of the cells as they go down the assembly line from stem cell to mature skin cell. But really, really what you got to talk about in the skin and skin aging is the health and welfare of your stem cell repository, this bank of stem cells that you have.
Why is it that when we age, stem cells stop being used for reparation like they're supposed to?
It's a really good question, and you know, I have to be honest with you, no one knows the exact answer. There's two possibilities, and it may be tissue dependent. In other words, whether you look at, say, the heart or the skin or the liver or the brain, it may be different in each one of these. But two things seem to happen. Number one, in some cases, there seem to be actually fewer of them. They just don't seem to populate as much. They stop reproducing. It's kind of, I hate to say it, it's sort of like what happens to us as we get older. We don't have as much sex, maybe, and we certainly don't have as many children as we get over a certain age. The same thing happens in the stem cell populations. But the other thing that seems to happen is they just, even when they populate, even when they reproduce, they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go.
So differentiation, they don't have the blueprint any longer to do what they're
supposed to do. They lose the ability to respond to the signals. They can actually grow repopulate to a degree their stem cell nests, we call them, these areas of stem cell accumulation. But they don't know where to go. They don't know to go from stem cell to middle differentiated stem cell to early skin cell to keratinocyte. They don't know how to go down that assembly line. So it's two things.
Okay. So now let's talk about a product that we have now started to promote on the show that Elisa Profumo has been using for a few weeks now. And that is RG Cell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the deal was we were going to use it. I let her use it because I've got a face like an old shoe. I thought, well, let's give this product a real chance. And Elisa takes care of her skin. And she buys expensive product. Provage. I mean, I could go through the list of products that she's used in the past that are quite expensive because she wants the skin on her face to stay youthful. And she's done a really good job. But she had these nagging little fine lines at the bottom of the eye socket where the bone ends and the globe of the eye begins.
Mm-hmm.
And when she would smile, she could see them, and they really bothered her. So we said, okay, let's see. Let's just use the RG cell in this area primarily. And I was the first one to say something. She didn't say anything. About a week and a half after using it, I said to her, I don't know if it's my imagination, but it looks like the skin in that area is thicker. It's like plump, and you don't have those wrinkles when you're smiling. She goes, you know, I noticed it too, but I didn't know what it could be from. I wanted to just kind of wait it out. The longer she used it, the more apparent the effects were. And then obviously she started using it on her entire face, and she started to notice a lot of this. It has almost like a plumping effect is what I would call it, where the skin becomes almost thin and wax paper-like.
Right.
It reverses that look. How is it doing that? Is it really activating stem cells, or is it working through a variety of different pathways?
Well, it's a variety of different things, but I just have to tell you that the type of testimonial, essentially, that you just gave us, unsolicited, is the kind we get pretty much every day. It takes a little while. Some people notice things almost immediately, depending on what the problem is with their skin. If the skin is dehydrated, as oftentimes older skin is, because it gets looser, so to speak, the junctions between the skin lose their ability to stay tight, and you lose moisture, and that causes that sort of waxy, dry-looking skin. RGCell can fix that very, very quickly. If there's scars or damage or wrinkles, it may take a little longer because that does require the stem cell activation properties, and that's something that it's variable, but it usually takes a couple weeks of use before you're going to see that kind of thing. But almost universally, we've had people just getting back to us saying this is great stuff. It's actually been a wonderful thing because it's only been available. I think right now I'm the only website in the country that I know of that has it, and other than the RGCell site, of course.
Right, right.
So we've had absolutely no trouble reselling the product because people love it. You know, it's like, oh, I got to get more of that because it's dramatic. And this is what's so cool about it, Carl. We're finally living in an age where all the promises that were made for cosmeceuticals and cosmetics for the past
hundred thousand years,
they're finally coming to fruition because we finally have some agents that actually get in there and work. RGCell hydrates, RGCell reduces inflammation, RGCell improves, it has ingredients in it that improve stem cell proliferation and differentiation, and it also has stuff in it that improves the collagen and protein balance in the skin and reverses that, helps reverse that to look more and more like youthful skin. So if you want to talk about truly de-aging the skin, that's what you just told me that Lisa's doing, and this is exactly what we see with almost everybody that uses the product. Some people takes a little longer than others, but it is dramatic. And it's so exciting for people because it's like, finally, something that actually works.
Well, and I was going to say that. I think that, so many of the cosmetic products that are advertised on TV by major cosmetic companies make all sorts of promises to rejuvenate the skin. And women buy them primarily, and some men buy them too, and use them. And you really have to look hard. You got to go, hey, I wonder if this is working. And it's kind of almost an expectation from the consumer. Yeah, I'll buy this. It's probably not going to work. And then all of a sudden you find something that works, and then you question, is this really the reason? Because nothing else has worked in the past. Have you found that kind of an attitude out there amongst the people that are using it?
There's a certain degree of shock, if you will. The people are a little reticent to say, well, I really think I look better, and people are telling me I look better, and they are asking me, what am I doing? What am I using? And geez, for the first time in my life, the money I spent, on these expensive cosmeceuticals has actually done something. It is kind of an anti-expectation. It is kind of a thing where people really have to look twice. But the longer you use it, the more you see this, the more the.
And that's what I want to do. I want to take a break, and then when we come back, I want to talk about the dose dependency. Is it something that if you have really bad skin, you go ahead and use a lot of it up front to kind of backload a little bit, and then find the maintenance dose, or does it not matter? We're talking with Dr. Dave Wonorowski. We're talking about a skin serum that you will find on the Superhuman Radio website. There's a banner ad there for RGCell. And the takeaway should be this. I'm going to start using it too. I allowed Elisa to use both samples so that we could get a real test, so to speak. But I'm anxious to get some myself because I want my face to look youthful again too. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies, and no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, melanotan-2, mechanical growth factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh-looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
Make 2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the AgeForce Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top selling products: Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultra Male RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Listen up, y'all, cause this is it. The beat that I'm banging is delicious.
I'm Fergalicious. So delicious.
I'm Fergalicious. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio.
I'm Fergalicious. Fergalicious.
We're talking with Dr. Dave Wonorowski, and we're talking about RGCell, which is a skin serum that you can find on superhumanradio.com. Alisa believes in it, and Alisa knows her stuff. I'll tell you what's really funny. Alisa really has beautiful skin, so it's easy to tell minute changes in her skin. And one of the things that she said about the product is that when she buys other products by major manufacturers, and I remember Provage because that was a really expensive product that she used to buy, three times the price of the monthly use of RGCell, by the way, and it had just one of the quote-unquote active ingredients that RGCell has. RGCell has like a dozen different ingredients that you'll find just one of them in this product or just one of them in that product. And we know from the supplement industry in general that quite often the reason supplements aren't effective is not because they a lack of efficacy, but the dosing is too low to see anything. And if you wanted to dose it at the right levels, you'd have to buy so much of it in so expensive amount that the manufacturers know, well, we can't sell this the way it should be. No one will buy this at that price. But RGCell has all these different ingredients in it. So my question to you is this. Is it effective to just use what is considered one vial per month in the initial stages? Or would I want to double or even triple up to kind of backload and give my skin a push back instead of just, a nudge back, so to speak, and then go to a maintenance dose of one vial a month?
Well, Carl, don't take this the wrong way, but based on your comments about your skin, you'd probably want to bathe
your face. Yeah, six a day, I know.
But now, let's talk seriously about this, okay? The best way to use it in terms of backloading is not necessarily to apply more at once, but to apply it more frequently. All compounds have a half-life. You know, everything is there for a while, and then it's metabolized and used up by the body. That's the natural process of everything, whether it's food or serum or drugs. So in this situation, what I would say is just use it more frequently, maybe 2 to 3 times a day. In that case, the vial is not going to last you as long. But one of the things I want to point out, and you've probably, or at least has probably experienced this, it doesn't take a lot. This product has another additional feature, which I think we really do need to talk about, and that's the lipid bilayer and nanoparticulate technology. It's a patented delivery system. So what this is all the ingredients are surrounded in a little sphere, if you will, and that sphere is designed to get through the skin so that none of the enzymes in the skin degrade it, and then it gets deep into the skin, the deep epidermal layers, which is where those stem cells and all those young proliferating cells live and where they really need to deliver these ingredients. So the sphere gets in there and releases the ingredients there. And so what you'd be better off doing, it doesn't take a whole lot. I mean, if you put 4 or 5 drops, just little drops out of the bulb dispenser that we use to deliver this, it will cover your entire face and neck. And that's because of this special delivery system. The other thing I'll point out, and this is not true of most cosmeceuticals or cosmetics, is that within 30 to 60 seconds, you can rub your hand over your skin and you'll feel the difference in the hydration level of your skin, but the compound is gone. It's already digging deep where it needs to go. So it's not an issue of necessarily using a lot more at once. It's an issue of maybe using it more frequently, 2 or 3 times a day. And again, it depends on what you're treating. If you're treating scars or fine wrinkles or things that are visible in terms of, oh, there's a spot or there's a scar or there's a piece of damage I want to get rid of, yes, it's going to take a little bit more work to get rid of that. If it's just used as a general anti-aging serum on otherwise decent-looking skin, healthy skin, or as a base for makeup, which is a perfect base because it disappears so quickly, then once a day is adequate.
Okay. Let's talk about more severe scarring and wrinkling for a second. Is it realistic to see the kind of results with this product that, say, someone like Elisa, who's taken care of her skin for so long, is seeing, albeit if I'm using it more frequently, will I start to see things in a couple of weeks, or if the damage to my skin is greater, it's going to take, you know, months?
It's going to take longer depending on the damage load to your skin. There's no question about that. But you got to start somewhere. I mean, that's the first thing. The other thing I should differentiate is the type of wrinkles, okay? Men in particular are going to have sort of what we call dermal furrows, and essentially what happens is if there's enough use of the musculature, frowning, smiling, whatever, and enough damage from the environment, eventually the wrinkle itself is going to go from the epidermis into the dermis and anchor. It's actually going to, like, grab onto the dermis.
It's a crease, right.
It's a crease, yeah. And that's called a dermal anchor. There's no, you know, no Botox, no RG, no, nothing is going to get rid of that except going in there, as far as I know. Anyway, I'm not a dermatologist. They may have a new way of doing this, maybe laser or something, but the old way of getting rid of that type of a crease is you go in with a very, very fine scissors, essentially make a small incision and cut that dermal anchor. So it's not realistic to get rid of those kinds of things. And again, not even, you know, Botox or Restylane or any of these fillers will get rid of those kinds of wrinkles. But the fine wrinkles, you know, in a couple weeks you'll probably see changes. Scarring is often diminished relatively quickly. Because of the stem cell factors in here, it's great for other types of trauma like sunburn or those sorts of things. We can't make a claim for acne, but it's number one, non-comedogenic, so it doesn't exacerbate acne. And there's a lot of antibacterials in there that would have activity against acne. So any kind of inflammatory skin condition or spots or fine wrinkles, I think you're going to see something fairly soon. I would give yourself 4 to 6 weeks,
okay,
on this.
Last question. Does the skin type play any role? I have very dark skin. I'm Southern Italian, and I have a tendency to scar almost in a keloid type fashion. So my African American counterparts and I share that in common. Then we have fair skinned people. Does it work better for some and not others? Is there any difference in what to expect in a fair skinned person versus a dark skinned person?
Well, there are definitely different skin types and the way people respond to injury. You mentioned keloid formation. This is an overproliferation of scar tissue. Without making a claim, I'm going to say that RG cell should benefit all skin types. Whether I can say that it benefits them all equally or the same way, again, this is more damage dependent than skin type dependent.
Okay.
But again, you're restoring the balance, the collagen balance in the skin towards youthful proliferation. Carl, if I may, I want to just quickly mention something. I do have a website that we offer RG cell on. It's www.drdavesbest.com. And today only, this is Valentine's Day, so we're showing some love here. We have $20 off the product and free shipping. So I thought I would mention that.
That's very cool.
And it's a great Valentine's Day gift, tremendous gift.
Very, very cool.
It's really not skin type dependent. It's more damage dependent.
Okay. Is it safe to say that people will either see results or not see results within the use of the first bottle so they can make their assumption pretty quickly on?
I think you should see something within the first bottle. I certainly did. And, I don't really have very good skin. 100-hour work weeks when I was younger, not particularly careful about sun exposure relative to skin. So all of that, Yeah, I think that one bottle you should begin to see something for sure. But, again, if you're looking for really dramatic, you might have to go a little longer.
Okay. All right, Dr. Dave, I want to thank you so much for coming on Superhuman Radio to talk about RG Cell. And don't forget, if you miss Dr. Dave's offer, you can always go to superhumanradio.com and click the RG Cell banner ad right there to learn more. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
It's my pleasure. I appreciate it, Carl, and I look forward to speaking with you guys again.
Take care. All right, stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be joined all the way from Munster, Germany, by the brilliant Adele Musa as we perform the Subversity Science Roundup about science in the news and even some of your questions. Adele is paying special attention. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you in the midst of cutting body fat? Feel exhausted when it's time to train but don't want to use pre-workout drinks because they're loaded with sugar and carbs? Ice V2 is here to help you get intense while carbohydrate depleted. Ice V2 has only 1 gram of non-sugar carbs per serving. Ice V2 is loaded with strength-amplifying anabolic activators that will make your workouts more productive while allowing you to cut the fat. Cut the fat. Loaded with amino acids, Ice V2 contains the unique Formel Norvaline that acts as a pump amplifier. Fire. Get Ice V2 today at xfmuscle.com.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
calling all men.
The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, stimulant-free pre-workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
You and I, we may look the same, but we are very far apart. There's bullet holes where my compassion used.
Yes, I hear you.
Oh,
I just heard you clip. That was good. Very good. Adele was concerned that we had some connectivity issues between here and Munster, Germany. And he said, I hope my microphone is working. So, yes, we heard you clear your throat. It's working perfectly. You sound wonderful.
Okay, fine. Because Skype told me that I had no microphone installed at all. Yeah. And funnily, it did connect anyway, and nothing else happened. So I wasn't sure because I had the mic on mute in the during the interlude, and we couldn't tell whether I was connected and it would work or whether it wouldn't work.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. Well, you're here, and it's great to have you back on the show, and we have lots of good discussions to talk about. But first, we have to start off with the continuing discussion about aspartame, which you have had written articles about in the past and talked about in the past, but yet it looks like the subject continues to be interesting to people. And that is, all of the research on aspartame seems to always be a result of mega doses, unrealistic doses of aspartame that lead to the deleterious effects of aspartame. However, there was a recent study that Elisa, I think, spoke about on Casual Friday that you also chimed in about, that used what is considered real-world doses of aspartame and it had some effect. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, actually, those are two different studies. The one Elisa is referring to is actually an epidemiological study which came out late last year.
Oh.
And the researchers did a reanalysis of data from the NHANES yearly questionnaires where the American government, so to say, is trying to find out how the average health of the American citizens is.
Okay.
And they reanalyzed the data and they plucked in the soda consumption and the consumption of the of diet soda and tried to find out whether there was a connection to the development of cancer. And I think it is partly from the NHANES study and the Nurses' Health study. So there is really much data in this analysis. On the other hand, it has the usual downside that it is really difficult to tell how accurate the data is.
Yeah, self-reporting, namely.
Yeah, of course. And what exactly the scientists did in order to elucidate those effects. And when they analyzed this particular data set, they found that there was, for various cancers, there was an increase in risk with general consumption of diet soda, and specifically with aspartame. Now, if you read the or many of the second-hand articles on the internet, it oftentimes sounded as if this was the first long-term study, which really followed the people, but this is not the case. While they used data sets from several years, they did not do a longitudinal study, but always compared the individual data sets from 1 year to the next, and tried to find out whether people who consumed diet soda had increased risk of cancer. And specifically, as far as trying to find out whether the effects are aspartame specific, there's the problem that obviously the data on aspartame was just gathered for one of all those years. So while the overall data comes from several years, the information about how much aspartame the individuals actually consumed was just evaluated in one of those years. So it's difficult to say how accurate the data is. But
did they correct for anything? Like, even though people that were drinking more diet soda also had type 2 diabetes or had a high BMI or anything like that?
Yeah, they did that, of course. And interestingly enough, the differences were not so pronounced as you would have expected. When I looked at the study, I did actually expect that maybe people who are overweight would rather consume more diet soda.
That's exactly what I was just thinking when you were talking was, well, let's look at who drinks diet soda. The person who goes to McDonald's buys the big hamburger, the big fries, and the diet soda. Well, sure, you know, the diet soda is not the problem there. It's the other eating habits. So it's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, but in this case, this wasn't really the case. So if you look, for example, at the women, in their case, the fruit and vegetable intake is the highest in those women who consume more than one serving of diet soda per day. Also, they are the ones who smoke the least, and in general, there is no real connection with all the well-established bad things, so to say, that could precipitate to cancer. So it's difficult. It would probably not even have made such a great difference, or rather maybe in the other direction if they did not correct for these factors.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's still really difficult to say how accurate the data from the study is. And what's particularly amusing, at least to me, is that the same people who are now trying to tell everyone that this study would finally prove that aspartame causes cancer. And I'm not saying that it doesn't, but I don't think that this the last word is already said. But the same people who use this study to say aspartame causes cancer are usually those who are pointing with a finger at other studies done on the same data set, saying that this is incorrect and the data would not be correct because it's just they are just questioning people, as in particular the nurse's health study is often used to verify that consuming a high grain diet is particularly healthy, and other things that are heavily criticized by the same people who are now on the fences saying that finally it was proven that aspartame kills.
So again. They accept the information that is in favor of their cause and reject the information that is against their cause from the same research, right?
Yeah, I must admit that for me it's often the same. That at least I'm looking with a different eye on a study that seems to prove what I have always believed. So it's difficult to free yourself of this bias,
right.
But you really have to be honest that this is one study. Which appears to be conclusive, but on the other hand, it's really difficult to say how effective and how successful they were in trying to figure out if it's aspartame, cyclamate, for example, which
right.
is also suspected to cause cancer and all sorts of other diseases, and it's also particularly rich in various diet sodas. Often you have this mixture of all sorts of artificial sweeteners to create a more sugary taste, so to say. Because if you just had aspartame, for example, nobody would drink a Diet Coke
right.
if it didn't contain other sweeteners at all.
Is there evidence out there, and I know this is not planned to discuss, but it ended up in a post that I saw on Facebook. Is there evidence that consumption of diet alternative sweeteners actually increases the desire for sugar or more sweetness? They actually may backfire from the standpoint of replacing sugar with artificial sweeteners really doesn't help anything in as far as the desire for more to consume more sweet things.
That's actually a pretty interesting topic. It's difficult to say because we don't really have enough data, and I think that even though it may not really make a biological difference whether you look at rodents or at humans, there is a large psychological difference because we have the choice of what we are eating, and we have the possibility to say, well, I'd like to have chocolate today, and a rodent just has to eat what's served to it.
Right.
So one of the main problems with the rodent studies on this particular aspect is that they really cannot elucidate what will happen if, for example, you develop an exaggerated sweet tooth due to the consumption of all those artificial sweetened foods.
Right.
What we know is, and this is also from human studies, that people who consume diet soda on a regular basis have a different response in the brain where dopamine is produced in response to the ingestion of sweet foods. And it looks like the hedonic value of sweet foods is reduced due to the chronic overexposure to those extreme sweet artificial sweeteners.
Mm.
I don't know if some of the listeners maybe remember their first Diet Coke. I suppose it was ridiculously sweet.
Yes.
And nobody really liked it. But for many people, it was like, well, at least it does not have that much calories. And two or three bottles later, all of a sudden, it does not taste that sweet any longer. So this accommodation effect that results here will also have a downstream effect, for example, on eating foods. Many people say that an apple doesn't taste sweet at all because they are used to those very intense sweet tastes, not only of artificial sweetened foods, but also of those foods which are sweetened with tons of high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
And everybody knows fructose is sweeter than regular sugar. So this would have a similar effect. And we are still only beginning to understand which downline effects, which physiological but also psychological and food choice related effects the artificial sweeteners actually have. On the other hand, it's pretty clear that when you are dieting and you are having a sweet tooth and you cannot satisfy it or you can't go without satisfying it, then dietary sweeteners are really helpful. And I know a lot of competitors who are competing in bodybuilding or fitness who also say that they couldn't go without their Diet Coke on a diet.
Right.
And obviously, this does not really hamper the fat loss, as you can see in the outcome.
Right.
But things may be different when you are quasi allowed to eat whatever you want. And whenever you're in a caloric deficit, different rules apply. You can afford almost everything as long as at the end of the day you've spent more energy than your body was able to derive from the foods you ate.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. Adele, let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about the potential for caloric restriction during pregnancy and its possible effects on the fetus. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup, where you will hear science totally differently than you would in the mainstream media, delivered by the brilliant Adele Moussa. You don't have to wait for every Thursday to hear his thoughts or read his thoughts. You can go to his website, Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. Go there, be smarter. We'll be right back.
We've seen it in the movies. Now let's see if it's true.
Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Save money and gain performance and health benefits with Whey Natural USA. They are overstocked and having a blowout sale on 2.5 pound jugs of grass-fed whey. This awesome product comes from Amish-fed cows inside the USA. Whey Natural USA is cold processed through the patented Chill-Rite method and comes with only 3 ingredients: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Save big. Just click the Whey Natural USA banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Get a free sample plus a 15% discount with free shipping coupon product for the first 100 customers. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Make 2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the AgeForce Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all change now. With Quest Protein Bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest Bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all change with the Quest Bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechanogrowth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. Okay, we know that mothers who are obese during pregnancy develop fetuses in an almost type 2 diabetic environment. Those children tend to be much bigger and heavier and prone to developing a lot of chronic diseases later on in life. Adele sent me a copy of a research paper that looks at energy restriction during pregnancy. Talk about it, Adele. What did they find out?
Well, of course, they did not energy restrict human beings, but rodents. And they found something that will remind people of the expression, the thrifty phenotype. So oftentimes you hear that after a famine, people are, or the children who are born during a famine, are more susceptible to becoming obese. And basically that is the same as a caloric restriction during gestation, during pregnancy. And this is what they did with the rodents in the study. They reduced their caloric intake by 20% which is about the amount of calories you would recommend if you wanted to extend your life by eating less than you actually need. And the effect was, as expected, at least in the mothers, an increase in the sirtuin 1 protein expression. And we've been talking about sirtuin 3 in the last show or the show before, and about its effect on longevity. And actually, sirtuin 1 is part of this protein family, which are all beneficial in terms of longevity. So while the effect for the mother may have been there, the downstream effect for the offspring, and especially for the male offspring, was a profound decrease in the expression of all sorts of proteins which are involved in the first of all in the release of fat from the adipose tissue, and also in the expenditure and oxidation of fat from the adipose tissue. And in rodents, we all know that the brown adipose tissue also plays an important role in terms of energy expenditure during thermogenesis. And this was the ability of the male offspring in particular to expend energy in the adipose tissue, but also in other tissues, was clearly reduced. And interestingly, the only effect that was really pronounced in the female offspring as well was a decrease in the expression of AMP kinase. And AMP kinase is actually the counterpart to mTOR. So where mTOR builds muscle and builds tissue in general, AMP kinase is responsible for turning existing tissue into energy, and also for repairing and renewing damaged tissues. And in general, this relatively mild caloric restriction during gestation had very pronounced downstream effects that will not only predispose the offspring to get obese much faster, but it is also implicated in cancer, because the AMP kinase expression is actually pretty important aspect in cancer protection. As I've mentioned before, it is involved in the usual and the regular cell cycle. So to summarize, the rodent study actually provides evidence that in mammals there appears to be this programming effect during pregnancy, when the mother does not get enough energy, then the offspring is programmed to save energy as well. And this obviously would be an advantage,
right,
when the energy shortage was still in place when the offspring is born and becomes an adult. But it is obviously a disadvantage in an environment like ours, where actually energy abundance is the problem and not lack of energy.
But this makes perfect sense. When you were talking about this, I'm thinking to myself, you know, the body is perfect. It knows that if you're bringing offspring into a world where you as the mother, the host, can't even feed yourself, then the baby has to be genetically programmed to take the greatest advantage of this, the least amount of energy to survive. It makes perfect sense. But what doesn't make perfect sense is the opposite. And that being, so if you become obese as a mother during pregnancy, why doesn't the baby get programmed with a more thrifty gene saying, well, energy is in abundance, so we're going to program you so that in the abundance of energy, you don't have to produce as much fat?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But in essence, this has got to do with what happens to the mother, because we know that when you're insulin resistant, your body does not really realize any longer that it has an abundance of energy, because it cannot really access all the energy. And this is one of the main problems that makes it even more difficult for obese people to lose weight,
right,
because when you're insulin resistant and your tissue does not sense that you already have high blood glucose levels, so to say, even the liver, which is also insulin resistant, will keep producing glucose from other nutrients. So the gluconeogenesis, the production of glucose in the liver, keeps on, is not switched off, despite the fact that you already have high glucose levels, because insulin is actually what switches it, what will switch the insulin, the glucose production at, in the liver off, but the receptor does not react to the insulin any longer, or at least not to the desired degree. And therefore you end up in a vicious circle. And I suspect that, due to this fact, there is no genetic programming that would, allow the offspring to deal with an energy abundance in when the mother is already really obese.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. I want to move on to, the omega-3, fish oil, study and its effect on body fat. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's interesting now, because this is finally a human study done with healthy human beings, and they fed the participants a standardized meal, a standardized meal which was high in glucose. So they wanted to see what happens when insulin spikes, and usually you will see as soon as insulin goes up, the body fat cells, close. They won't release any fat. And they wanted to see what happens when you administer different types of oils. In this case, fish oil, a medium chain triglyceride oil, then olive oil, which is a rich source of monounsaturated fat, and a an oil which was high in omega-6 fatty acids. And basically, the results show that while in the human trial itself, there were not really any differences in terms of the shutdown. So all suppressed, or the level of fatty acid release was suppressed in all trials to a similar degree. What they did, however, see in a subsequent analysis is that at the level of the liver, the supplementation with or the administration of DHA, which is one of the omega-3 fatty acids, the long chain omega-3 fatty acids and fish oil, did actually increase or re-increase, so to say, the expression of a protein which is responsible for the release of fatty acids from the fat cells by 70-fold. So you could say that it increased, there was a tremendous increase in the potential to burn fat despite ingesting insulin. And this would actually also explain why fish oil is so so effective in reducing triglycerides, even in people who are diabetic, because it reinstitutes the ability, first of all, to access the fat, and second of all, also to oxidize it. And if you compare that to the other oils, it's interesting to see that the follow-up, or although not very close with 27-fold, was linoleic acid, so omega-6 fatty acid.
Right.
And the monounsaturated and the other fatty acids were somewhere in between. So in the end, this goes to show you that there is a benefit to polyunsaturated fatty acids in general. Unfortunately, the omega-6 fatty acids have other negative side effects, especially when they are consumed in overabundance.
Right.
Directly related, there's been published another study a few days ago, which showed that arachidonic acid, which is the quasi equivalent of DHA on the omega-3 side.
Right.
You have got DHA, and on the omega-6 side, you have got arachidonic acid. And it has a metabolite when it's converted in the body into another metabolite, this particular molecule does actually allow an already overloaded, so to say, fat cell to take up more fat, exactly.
Right.
And the result is not just that you're getting fatter and fatter, but unfortunately you're also at the same time getting more inflamed and more inflamed.
Well, and yes. also during the first half hour we had the colleague of Dr. Joseph Hiblin. Dr. Joseph Hiblin came on and also talked about the arachidonic acid linkage to endogenous cannabinoid production.
Yeah.
So not only does it allow the fat cell to take up more, but it also increase or decreases satiety. And so you eat more and you can store more. How efficient.
Yeah. What the real problem is only that you even that although there are all those negative side effects when it's there in overabundance, which is already, quote unquote normal in our society because you've got omega-6 fatty acids nearly everywhere. When you have none of them, you are in a problem as well because our brain needs almost as much, or I think it needs the arachidonic acid to the same degree as it needs the DHA. So both are in a way essential, and it's also interesting that in the end, it will always depend on what your body does with the arachidonic acid. If it does not convert it to the bad stuff, so to say, it's actually harmless. But if it does, you are in real trouble.
Yeah. Before we go to the break, I want to go a little bit long here. Let's move right to the obesity causes low vitamin D, because this is all over the news, and a lot of people don't really know what to take from this. Does increasing vitamin D levels have an effect directly on obesity? Also, how does obesity cause low vitamin D levels? Were you able to determine that from the study?
Well, actually, how it does do that was not part of the study. And until 10 hours ago, I was with all the other people and did not really know what to think of this. Although I've always said that there is no evidence that low vitamin D will make you obese. Actually, this is the first study which at least provide some evidence that this is a one-way street. So what the scientists did is that they analyzed 21 adult cohorts from previous studies with over 40,000 participants, and they did a specific analysis which allowed them to find out whether this is a connection like if A then B and if B then A, or if this goes just one way. And what they found is that there's conclusive evidence that higher BMI leads to lower vitamin D levels. While, and I quote, any effect of lower vitamin D levels on increasing BMI are likely to be small if non-existent. So, in other words, it appears as if people who are gaining weight and people, especially people who are obese, have, for whatever reason, which was not analyzed in this particular study, usually lower and in many cases even deficient vitamin D levels. On the other hand, the other way, people with low vitamin D levels don't get obese automatically. They are already obese usually.
Oh. Interesting.
So, this would also explain why many of the trials where people or where scientists supplemented various normal people or obese people or diabetics with vitamin D did not really produce any beneficial results, even if the levels went up. And the interesting thing is that in some cases, especially in those trials with obese people, it was really hard to even get the levels up. So it appears that we have been talking about that in the last show, that there must be some effect on the cytochrome cascade, which either does not allow the vitamin D to be stored, or which leads to the vitamin D being cleared right away. Whether this is because it's used, so to say, this one of the theories, or whether this is because there is a defect in the enzymatic cascade is not really sure, or it has not really been determined yet.
Okay, we have to take a commercial break. And we've got lots of more interesting things to talk about. So let's do this. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup on Superhuman Radio. We shall return.
Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today. Save money and gain performance and health benefits with Whey Natural USA. They are overstocked and having a blowout sale on 2.5 pound jugs of grass-fed whey. This awesome product comes from Amish-fed cows inside the USA. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite method and comes with only three ingredients: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Save big. Just click the Whey Natural USA banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Get a free sample plus a 15% discount with free shipping coupon product for the first 100 customers.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Guys and gals, are you over 30 with a poor sex drive, gaining unwanted fat, or feel weak or tired? You may be suffering from hormone imbalances that can be treated affordably by physician-supervised hormone therapy. Why wait to feel like you again? Call Core Medical Group now to schedule your hormone check and save $100 when you mention Superhuman Radio. Call 617-869-7961. That's 617-869-7961. Physical and medical history required prior to therapy. Some restrictions apply. Call for details. 617-869-7961. Feel like you again.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay, here's what I want to move to, Adele. Especially because there's a poll up on Supium Radio about libido. I've come to the conclusion that libido is more important as a first line symptom of illness, and that libido in older age may be a snapshot into how well you're aging and longevity. And you have a discussion here about androgens, the lack thereof, especially in androgen deprivation therapy, which is used to treat prostate cancer as the gold standard here in the United States, at least. The effects of androgen deprivation, can we talk about that?
Yeah, that was a particularly interesting study, and there are actually not many which summarize all sorts of effects. And this particular study had three large tables with adverse effects and listing things ranging from decreased libido and erectile dysfunction, over cognitive impairment and psychological impairment, to loss of general quality of life and physical things like weight gain and fat gain. And I found it particularly interesting that the scientists report that within the first 12 weeks, the average man on androgen deprivation therapy is a good word for this, he will gain 4.3% body fat in 12 weeks, and in the first year, on average, 7.7%. Some gain the double the amount, 14%. So let's assume you have been hovering around at 20%, which is even relatively low for the average, especially older man, and you add 14% body fat to that, you are suddenly in a whole different, you're playing, so to say, in a whole different league. And if you if you add to that that you are at risk of gynecomastia, and what I found interesting, that even your pineal length is reduced by a couple of centimeters, you see that these physical changes alone will decrease your quality of life and could potentially lead to psychological problems. And in the long run, you're at risk of osteopenia, of skeletal fractures, of diabetes, of high blood lipids, and interestingly also of losing your teeth, which is something I have not heard before, so of dental problems, so to say.
Yeah.
The list is really extensive, and I think, or I would doubt that that doctors will provide their patients with a side effect list that would be that extensive, at least. It's quite interesting. The tables in the study, they list the adverse effect on the left side, and there's just one keyword, like decreased libido. And then they list all the details. And if you just got the leftmost column, I think everybody would say, well, this is a potential side effect, cannot be so bad. But if you look at the whole table and at the incidence rates and also at the degree of dysfunction, then you suddenly see, oh, this could really be a problem. And I don't know if it's how it's done in the US, and I don't even know how it's done here in Germany, but I think in many cases people do not really question when their doctor tells them that this is the best for you, and the side effects are 30 seconds later they have listed all the side effects, and they went in from one ear and went out to the other ear.
Right.
And you're just trusting that this will be the right treatment for you. And I think that it's, on the one hand, of course, nobody is an the doctor is the expert, even if you've got a quote-unquote bad doctor who doesn't really know what he's doing. He has a degree, and he should actually know what he's doing. And you usually trust your doctor. But on the other hand, I think that many patients also, they don't really want to spend too much time on thinking about that, and they want somebody else to take the responsibility for their treatment, so to say. And therefore, many are really easily to be satisfied with very little information. And this can be a problem, because maybe there is a different solution to the problem.
Yeah.
Or an alternative treatment method.
Well, especially since the Journal of the American Cancer Society published their position 3 years ago that androgens are not the reason for prostate cancer. But yet, you know, the standard of care today just ignored that completely and continued to go after androgens when there's a closer linkage to estrogen, one of the estrogens, and sex hormone binding globulin. Not even DHT is linked, not DHEA, not testosterone. They are not. They are considered corollary by the American Cancer Society to prostate cancer. But yet they still do these. This is a terrible thing that they do to men with their androgen deprivation approach. And it leads to other diseases. A lot of these guys may not die of their prostate cancer. They probably die of secondary diseases related to the androgen deprivation. So
the greatest or the most significant problem I see is that actually you don't really have a very high likelihood that it will even work, so that there is no cancer progression. Because there are other pathways by which your body can also produce maybe lower amounts of growth promoting hormones, but it can still derive them, and therefore in many cases even people on androgen deprivation therapy will either at least have the cancer persist or in many cases even proliferate. Because once you're set on androgen deprivation therapy, you already have prostate cancer. And in most circumstances, it's also a pretty hazardous type of prostate cancer. And when it's starting to proliferate, it's actually in a way already too late to take away the androgens. And from breast cancer, we also know that not all breast cancer is estrogen dependent. And therefore, only in many cases, for example, the classic therapy with selective estrogen receptor modulators will not really work. And the same is true for prostate cancer. So a one-size-fits-all approach is particularly inappropriate when the side effects are so profound.
Yeah. Okay, I want to move on to something else, which is another critical message that we talk about here on Superhuman Radio. I want to talk about sleep a little bit, but I want to start from the bottom up of the list. Only one night of fragmented sleep increases appetite, reduces REM sleep, minimizes GLP-1, which is affects satiety, and reverses healthy patterns of insulin expression. And the reason why, when I don't sleep well, I fast the next day. First of all, you think I'm doing the wrong thing by fasting the next day when I don't sleep well? And let's talk about this study.
It's difficult to say whether it's really necessary to fast the next day, but in essence, it does certainly make sense. Although the interesting thing about this study, or what was news to me at least, is that you are not really insulin resistant all day, but that the regular pattern is reversed. So usually you would be more insulin sensitive. You would be releasing more insulin in the morning because your cortisol's up, and therefore you need more insulin, so to say, to get the job done. And in the evening, you would have lower insulin release to the same amount of glucose, which is, by the way, contrary to what people will usually tell you, that you should pick out on carbohydrates in the morning because you're particularly insulin sensitive, which is not the case. When you're waking up and your cortisol levels have just woken you up, high cortisol, low insulin sensitivity, and not the other way around. They unfortunately did not assess the cortisol levels in the study at hand, but I would bet that this is the same. So after fragmented sleep, you don't have the high cortisol levels in the morning, but you have them still low because actually you are supposed to be still sleeping. You didn't get enough sleep, so cortisol wouldn't really wake you up. It's your alarm clock which woke you up.
Right.
Therefore, you are dragging along the whole morning. Your insulin pattern is reversed. And in the afternoon, all of a sudden, your cortisol ramps up again. This, on the other hand, means that the next night's sleep will be bad as well, because when you go to bed and your cortisol has just risen to the level it should be in the morning, your overall pattern is totally reversed. And this is actually what we are seeing, or what is really the emerging picture with all those studies on sleep deprivation, is that the real problem is not so much about not getting enough sleep as it is about not having a regular rhythm your body is adapted to. a regular rhythm, which is not only formed by your sleeping habits, but also by your eating habits. Because, this is part of the way you set your internal clock. Is one thing is the light. That's probably the most important factor, light. The second thing is obviously sleep. And the third thing is food. And all those three can modulate, those clock genes in different tissues. For example, in the liver in particularly, the liver is really susceptible to food clues, to when you eat. And the clock in the liver is set by your food intake. And when all those clocks, the clock in your brain that is, most influenced by the light and the clock in your liver, when they are not synchronized, then you are having a real problem. Like, for example, in the study here, you would be eating, at the wrong time. And when you're fasting all day long, or at least, for the time, for the whole morning, this would actually, be appropriate because your body is, thinking it's still asleep and would usually be fasting. On the other hand, if you know that you will return to your usual, sleeping habits, it might also be, wiser to keep your regular rhythm.
Eating habit. And, yeah. Yeah. I see that.
And just to accept that it may be possible that you're not really hitting the spot of optimal nutrient repartitioning on that particular day.
It needs to be said, you know, I've been banging the drum about snoring. A lot of people who have moderate snoring problems, while they may not think they're having fragmented sleep, they still are. A lot of sleep studies show that when you snore moderately, you don't go through the normal sleep cycles because you are still, while you may not have sleep apnea and be gasping for air, you never can get into the deepest levels of sleep. Or when you do, they're interrupted by your snoring. Quite often, you don't start, what I've learned from research is you don't start snoring your loudest until you get into the deepest levels of sleep, especially REM. And then it wakes you up. And so you don't spend enough time in those deep levels. So, when we talk about fragmented sleep, it's not just the guy who wakes up in the middle of the night two or three times for various reasons. It's those of you who snore and just aren't really getting the real recuperative value of sleep, which I am really banging my head about snoring in this country. I got to be honest with you. And I think there's something afoot, but that's another story. Adele, do you want to talk any more about that? Because I want to then move up to the effects of melatonin on protecting the male germ cells from endocrine disruptors like BPA.
Yeah, we can go on with that, yeah.
And because the reason I want to go to melatonin is because one of the ways to shut down nighttime cortisol levels, if you are having some sleep cycle dysrhythmia, is to take a dose of melatonin, which I want to also ask your opinion, because you've said some interesting things in the past about melatonin supplementation. But wouldn't it be safe to say that if you have a bad night's sleep, that around dusk, that taking a dose of melatonin can then help set up the first domino for proper regulation of sleep cycle, because it'll suppress cortisol while imparting the required sleep feelings?
It certainly will, yeah. And actually, I'm not really opposed against using melatonin.
One of the things that you said that really makes sense to me that I forgot about, melatonin is a hormone. We know back from the days of prohormones that if you took 100 milligrams of androstenedione, between 2.5 milligrams to 5 milligrams is all that ends up in your bloodstream, because the liver is very effective at getting that out of the system. So this idea of taking 3 milligrams of melatonin yields such a minute amount of melatonin in the bloodstream that you once said that you doubt that the lower doses even make it past the blood-brain barrier, which made me start to think of the concentrations, and that really it may be that effective doses of melatonin may begin at, let's say, 10 to 12 milligrams.
Well, there is relatively little science on the exact dosages, and there's also the problem that this will always depend on whether you have just eaten before And also on the general state of your digestive tract and even on the formulation. And not just whether it's sublingual or not, but also on the fillers that are used in the tablet. Maybe you remember the quote unquote scandal about, the new, the replacement version for the originally branded thyroxine, levothyroxine, the thyroid medication, which all of a sudden did not work the same as before. And the only difference in the preparation is that they use a slightly different, type of fillers. And that also, that will already, influence the bioavailability largely. So when we talked about that, I said that maybe it was due to the fact that the melatonin I've been using was prepared differently. But for me personally, I started really feeling an effect only with 10 milligrams of melatonin. And I did not see any downsides like grogginess, for example, the next morning. I think that it does make sense that in theory, 3 milligram would be plenty. If all of that really would end up in your bloodstream, this would be nice, but this could be even too much. But on the other hand, you really have to think of all what may be taken up or taken out of the blood, of the influx into the bloodstream by the liver, and what may not even be taken up in the stomach already. So it's difficult to say what the optimal dosage is, and whenever somebody asks me, I usually say start up with 3 milligrams and see if it works or if it doesn't. And this is nothing you will be able to say after 2 weeks. Maybe after 2 weeks you can have the first insight whether it does work at all. But after 1 week or so, usually the placebo effect is still so large that when you believe it will work, then it will work. When you are skeptic because you heard adults say that maybe 10 milligram would be better, you will say, oh no, 3 milligram does not work for me. 10 milligram is it. So you really have to give it some time and see whether it works or whether it doesn't. On the other hand, it's often said that it could be dangerous that when you take melatonin, your body stops producing melatonin by itself. There are, however, studies which show quite conclusively that this is not the case. There may be a small accommodation phase when you stop taking it, where it is not really that your body does not produce it anymore, but it's a difference whether the melatonin hits you as it does when you take it as a tablet, or whether your body produces its own melatonin and it's released slowly. So this may make a difference in terms of the way you are falling asleep or the way you are feeling. But in general, there does not really appear to be too much of a concern that taking melatonin for some time will really compromise your sleep. And there are even studies which show that once you've reestablished a regular sleeping habit by taking melatonin, this will help you even in the future when you stop taking it. So this alone should be worth trying it when you really have problems falling asleep, especially because all those medications, which you are often told that they are completely harmless, are not really that harmless. And many of them you will become addicted to many of them. And those really have nasty side effects when you stop taking them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's do this. Let's take our last commercial break. And when we come back, we've got a couple more stories to talk about. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup with the brilliant Adele Moussa. Visit subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com today. We'll be right back. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram.
Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Are you in the midst of cutting body fat? Feel exhausted when it's time to train but don't want to use pre-workout drinks because they're loaded with sugar and carbs? Ice V2 is here to help you get intense while carbohydrate depleted. Ice V2 has only 1 gram of non-sugar carbs per serving. Ice V2 is loaded with strength-amplifying anabolic activators that will make your workouts more productive while allowing you to cut the fat. Cut the fat. Loaded with amino acids, Ice V2 contains the unique Formel Norvaline that acts as a pump amplifier. Get Ice V2 today at xfmuscle.com.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. If you want to build muscle and burn fat, if you want to transform your body, your health, and fitness, then your goal should be to get a copy of The Blueprint from Rob Regish. Learn what the Blueprint Army already knows. There is no faster way to change the way you look and feel than by using The Blueprint. And now, when you order The Blueprint, you will also get absolutely free the Add 1 inch to Your Upper Arms in a Single Workout Seminar. That's a $20 value, absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Blueprint banner ad today. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Okay. Last thing I want to talk about is an article that you wrote. I want to say it was a week or so ago. It had a picture of a little rat laying on a sofa, and it said that taking 2 weeks off to reset the anabolic cascade, and it came at the right time for me because I had just gotten or was getting over the flu and was forced not to train for really about 3.5 weeks, which I'm not completely over the flu, I realize. Whatever it was that I caught has not left me yet, but it is leaving slowly. So I am back in the gym and not training nearly as heavy as I did before for a couple reasons. I'm not as strong as I was, but more importantly, I want my immune system to have enough juice to fight off whatever it was and continue to fight it. But let's talk about this this notion of taking time off, which many of us who are OCD about training find a hard time doing.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that as well. Whenever I take a week off planned, it's I have to fight every day not to go to the gym because it's I'm telling myself that I'm fully recovered and I can go back and it cannot hurt if I train just lightly. But I know that when I go, I'm not just training lightly, especially if I've already recovered for for 1 week or almost a week, then I want to hit it hard. But actually, maybe the study can help other people with the same problem to really stay at home. Because what the scientists found out is that the more you train and the longer you train continuously at the high intensity, the lower the actual use of the exercise is in terms of the expression of proteins such as mTOR. So the same amount of exercise which produced a really large response in the beginning when you are still fresh or when you have taken 1 or 2 or 3 weeks off, it will be reduced over time. And the best way to reset, so to say, this protein synthetic response to exercise is just to stay at home, to take 1 or better 2 weeks off and return to the gym afterwards. And if you look at the actual data of the study, you really see that there is a real reset taking place, which all of a sudden will reamp the training effect or the downstream training effect on the protein cascade, which regulates a skeletal muscular hypertrophy, is back to its original state, so to say. It's not like when you first hit the gym, but it's at least you will see improvements again. And there are actually a couple of studies even in trained individuals which show that while you're so quote-unquote stagnating, at least your gains are stagnating in 3 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks you are taking off. Afterwards, you suddenly really see an incline again, while in the phase before, you had been on the plateau of a logarithmic curve, which is initially relatively steep and will then become flat like a plateau, so to say. So this is really an option that is not only beneficial in terms of recovery and especially also in terms of not getting sick or getting hurt, because it's really necessary that you give your body the time off. It's also something that will not hamper, but rather improve the gains you're seeing afterwards. And in the first week and even in the second week, there are studies showing that clearly you're getting stronger. Because the structural changes they really need, which are responsible for strength gains in particular, they really need time, where you do not exercise every day and you do not, use your muscles every day. And therefore, this time off people usually regard as wasted time is really spent, is a really investment in future gains, so to say. And whenever you meet any professional athlete, he will be laughing at you that you are willing to train every day in the year and not even considering taking a week off.
Is 2 weeks the right number? Is there some other research out there that for those of us who are OCD, a week is good enough? Does it have to be 2 weeks? And if we take 2 weeks off, should we do active recovery stuff or just really just do nothing?
Well, in the studies here, they really did nothing. I would say that you can, for example, play basketball with friends or go for a ride on a bike, but do it as just a recreational activity and don't have this thought of being competing or of compensating for not being at the gym in your head. Just this will counteract the effects. And as far as the time goes, most studies say that you have to take at least 7 full days off. And the most beneficial response appears to be, in between 12 and say 18 days or so. And afterwards it is an extra. And when you're going longer than 3 weeks, this can actually be detrimental. There is another technique which is not this is called detraining when you're doing nothing at all. Another thing you could do is tapering, which is actually usually reducing the volume of your training mainly, so that you go to the gym and do only a few heavy sets and go home. You're spending, say, 15 minutes at the gym instead of 1 hour. This would be a typical tapering regimen. And this is usually done for longer time spans, but it does not have this resetting effect. It's much more to give your body at least a phase of lower stress levels, and at the same time, especially athletes use it in the weeks before a competition. Because interestingly enough, this type of especially low volume training is generating peak performance afterwards. So when you taper, at the end of the taper, you really can perform better in a, say, weightlifting meeting. Or when you're a sprinter, you will run faster afterwards. And it's interesting. It really works very well, and it's a proven technique that's used by many athletes. And if you think of the average gym rat who does not participate in competitions, you can still use both techniques. For example, many people will probably have a training plan that switches or that moves back and forth between hypertrophy phases and strength phases. And after a hypertrophy phase, for example, you could taper and then go into a strength phase. After that, you take off in order to reset your response to your growth response and make even better gains when you return to the gym for your next hypertrophy phase. So this would be a perfect way to use both techniques to first of all recover faster, protect yourself from getting injured and sick, and of course to optimize your gains. And let's face it, we all want to go on holidays or on vacation from time to time, and we don't always want to make sure that we have a gym there with the perfect equipment so that we can do our usual workouts. And this is also something you have to keep in mind. Life is not just about training, and you can't always, especially when you're not a professional athlete, it does not even make sense to schedule your life around your workouts. But it's meant to be the other way around.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
This alone will often force you to take a week off in your life. And if you know that it's beneficial and you know it in advance, you can actually plan it in a way that this week off is not a week lost, but an additional week won, so to say.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. Very, very good advice, Adele. As usual, thank you so much for all the hard work you put into the Subversity Science Roundup. A lot of good topics, and people can go to subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com to learn more. You don't have to wait for Thursdays to be exposed to the brilliance of Adele Moussa. You can visit his website daily. Thank you so much, Adele.
You're welcome.
And thank you also to, let's see, who did we have on the show today? Dr. Chris Ramsden from the NIH. And then, of course, Dr. Dave Onorowski for coming on today and spending some time with us at Supreme Radio. Don't forget, today is Valentine's Day. Show somebody you love that you care. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.